We know about the benefits of exercise, right? I mean, we might not do it, but we know we ought to. For our bodies and for our minds. And more has been discovered about exactly what kind of exercise is best and why. For example, my next guest has received a Royal Society Award for his groundbreaking research into the benefits of short bursts of high-intensity exercise. Dr. David Moreau leads the Brain Dynamics Lab at the University of Auckland, and he is, I believe, in our Auckland studio. Hello.
Good morning, Kim. Great to be here.
Have you had a short burst of high-intensity exercise today?
No, this morning, not yet, no.
And when you do, or if you do, what will you do?
Typically, the way I do it is on an elliptical or a treadmill, so indoors at a gym. But as I'm sure we'll get a chance to discuss, there are many other ways to achieve the same goals.
So how short and how intense?
So typically in the research that we did, what we found is that mostly what people are doing is bursts of about 20 to 30 seconds of exercise. So it seems very short, but it's at, you know, close to maximal intensity. So it's actually very, very exhausting.
So hang on, you'd immediately put your treadmill on high and just go for it for 20 to 30 seconds.
So most of the time there's a bit of a warm-up period, maybe for a minute or two, just to make sure that, you know, people are able to achieve that high intensity.
Good,
right,
good.
Away.
Warm-up's, yeah. Good. Yes, right. Okay. And then you just go for how high intensity? How do we measure this? Heart rate?
Exactly. Heart rate, typically. And so we're talking about, you know, between 80-90% of maximal heart rate. So, you know, if I'm, say, 20 years of age, typically we think about it as, you know, 220 minus age. So that would be 200 if we're thinking about 80% of that.
Hang on. What's that formula you just used?
Oh, yeah. So typically there are more accurate ways to measure that, but if people want to think about this in a sort of a roundabout way, 220 minus my current age is what's supposed to be my maximal heart rate at that point in time. And so, of course, it decreases as we age, so our heart is no longer able to accommodate those very high intensity exercise types of bursts. Yeah. But yeah, for someone who's 20, that's 200. Someone who's 30, that's 190, and so on and so forth.
And so, looking at the high intensity of the exercise, you should aim for that kind of heart rate, your 220 minus your age, but not exceed it?
Right. So it's typically difficult to exceed that just because we have some kind of, you know, upper limit. It's possible, but the idea is that it potentially could be dangerous. In practice, it's very, very difficult to exceed that. So we're just going to become exhausted and we're just not going to get there, right? And so the point here in terms of, you know, those short bursts of exercise, the point is to get, you know, as close as possible to that 80-90%. And typically, we're just going to get, you know, exhausted before we can surpass that in any way.
Yes. Yes, point taken. So previously, the greatest benefits were believed to be by aerobic exercise. So that's moderate intensity, about 20 to 30 minutes a day. What changed the view?
So we still know that this is a very good way, you know, to improve brain function. All that kind of work, it's come from animal studies that have been done in mice mostly, and that were the equivalent of aerobic exercise in adults. And so that sort of sparked that idea that for us, you know, the best way possible to make sure that our brains are healthy is actually to do aerobic exercise. And it's definitely a great way to do that. But recently, we found that there are other ways to achieve the same benefits. There are some people that are looking at resistance training or weightlifting. And so what we did is that we looked at high-intensity exercise in perhaps a more efficient way to achieve the same goals.
Right. So it's efficiency rather than better. It's because some of us are time poor and can't get out for 20, 30 minutes a day. You can just do a quick burst.
You're absolutely right. Yes, that's the idea. And so it doesn't have to be all there is in your schedule, right? A lot of people would like to go for longer forms of exercise, a jog on Sunday morning or jog on Saturday morning, listen to you maybe. But it's definitely the case that sometimes, you know, we get busy and it might not be that easy to get out of work and exercise for an hour. And so the idea here is that we're saying, well, you know, that shouldn't discourage you to exercise. We're saying, well, you can actually do a lot of good in a short period of time. And that can be as short as 10 minutes, you know, a little burst of 20 to 30 seconds interleaved with rest. And that can be your workout right there.
So it's not better. It's an alternative.
Exactly. It's another option. We can think of it as a hack, you know, for busy people, and they don't have the time to get their, you know, proper workout in, if we want to call it that. And what we're saying is, well, here's an alternative, right? If you don't have time to do, to engage with longer forms of exercise, then just so you know, you can get the same benefits with something shorter.
Would it be, I don't know whether you've done any studies on people who do both?
So we haven't done that. We haven't mixed the two. But it's definitely the case that one thing that we know is also that a very important component of exercise is also our ability to commit to a long-term program, right? So a lot of people, especially we've got New Year's resolution coming in a few weeks, a lot of people are going to, have those kinds of resolutions for a little while and then not necessarily commit in the long term.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know either, but I'm just guessing. Imagine, hypothetically, imagine if that were the case. Well, having a bit of variety here is actually potentially helpful in, you know, sort of staying engaged with the activity and saying that, well, sometimes I do this type of activity, sometimes I do this, sometimes I'm on a bike, sometimes I go for a swim, sometimes I do a very short, high intensity exercise type of regimen. And so those things that can make sure that we stay motivated in the long run and that we stay engaged with physical exercise.
All right. So the body is one thing, the brain's another. What does this do for the brain?
Right, that's a really great question, right? Especially since exercise.
Yeah, well, I've had a brief, short, intense burst of energy exercise.
Yeah. It totally shows. Exercise compared to other forms of brain training exercise. We know all those computerized games that are supposed to, you know, get our brains healthy and everything. And so one thing that is great about exercise, what you just pointed out, right? That's we actually know of those benefits on the body, which are already tremendous. And on top of that, we know that there are also benefits on the brain. In terms of, to answer your question more directly, the kind of advantages that we see is that, first of all, better blood flow to the brain, which seems maybe minor, but actually is a big deal. So we get better supplies of nutrients and everything the brain needs because we're in better shape to begin with. Exercise also leads to the release of little molecules in the brain that are responsible for our moods and behaviors, molecules like that are called neurotransmitters, like dopamine, endorphins as well. If you've heard of the runner's high, it's mostly due to endorphins being released.
I wonder why. Is there an answer to that? Like, if I'm lying on the sofa eating chocolate and watching a really crappy television series, why don't my endorphins go through the roof?
So they can. That exercise is not the only way to do that. They can, especially with, you know, if you're experiencing some happy moments in life. So it's definitely not the only way.
You mean when you're having sex? Is that an euphemism for having sex?
That's one example. Where you probably have a fair release of endorphins as well. That's right.
So you can get endorphins a number of ways. Why would I bother taking exercise to get them?
Yeah, so it's a good point. I think it's that holistic aspect to exercise that's very appealing to a lot of people. So on top of, you know, those types of benefits that we see for the body, those benefits that we see for the brain, it's a very all-encompassing approach to take care of ourselves. And all those little bits of, you know, the endorphin release, dopamine release, you know, better blood flow and everything, we can get that through, you know, various ways. We could take medication as well to get there. But there are always some side effects that are not there when we exercise. And so exercise is kind of a magic pill, if you will, in the sense that it's kind of tapping on all those different aspects at the same time. And the side effects are that you're getting in better health, in better shape, right? So it's in that sense, it's a very appealing way to take care of our brains.
You did some tests on children between the ages of 7 and 13, I think, on this high-intensity training. What were the results?
Yeah, so the results were that you know, they were doing better at a number of cognitive tasks. So the way their brain functioned in this case, those tasks that allow us to juggle multiple things at once or to pay close attention to something. And we know that those things are very, very important in school, our ability to stay on task, right, and to keep on going with that. And so we saw that they were getting better at those things over time. Now, one important distinction to make between those two types of research that you just mentioned is that exercise has two kinds of benefits in a way. There's that immediate benefit that you get, that acute benefit that you get immediately after exercising, where if you put people in a lab and you test them on some, you know, different types of brain games or cognitive tasks, you see that they're generally better. But that wears off fairly quickly, right? And the type of research that you just mentioned with kids in schools is research where we had them, you know, exercise every day for about 3 months. And we tested them after that, and we saw some long-term effects that are more likely to, you know, stick around for a little while. So those are two types of effects that we can tap with exercise. There's that acute effect immediately after exercise, and that long-term effect if we engage in a longer form of, in a longer regimen.
Would you recommend this high-intensity training for people, you know, over 70, for example?
So there are definitely precautions that need to be taken for people that are a little bit older. You know, that warm-up that we mentioned before is one of them, right? We want to make sure that that they're warm and ready by the time they start to exercise. Mm. But by and large, you know, if those things are done right, they're done based on your heart rate. And so they're personalized in a way. And so what I'm going to do and the intensity that I'm going to go for might not be the same as someone who's younger and in better shape than I am, or it might not be the same as someone who's over 70 either, right? And so the idea is that this needs to be tweaked a little bit. This needs to be based on my fitness level at that point in time. And that potentially if it gets better over time, you know, like the exercise that I'm doing should also get a little bit more intense. But in a way, there's no reason why this wouldn't be used for older people. But it's definitely the case that maybe we have to make sure that those things are done in a safe way.
Quite right. Thank you. David Moreau, who is with the Brain Dynamics Lab at the University of Auckland.